This recording is entitled Revolutionary Lant, presented by Chris Perrin. This message was recorded at the 31st Annual Virginia Homeschool Convention. This recording is copyrighted material and cannot be duplicated or distributed in any physical or electronic format. For more information on this conference, please visit www.heav.org.
Salvete omnes. Hello, everyone. How many of you are already studying Latin with your children? Okay. How many of you know that you will be studying it next year? Okay. And how many of you are here investigating and contemplating the possibility of studying Latin? Okay. We almost are divided into thirds. Maybe we could have some kind of a competition here. I'm pleased that you've come to be with me. We'll leave some time for questions at the end as well, so I might not get to every burning question in my presentation that you may have, so let's have some conversation at the end. Please take some notes when you have a question, and I'll make sure to leave some time. In fact, if while I'm presenting you have a question that is important enough that you just need to raise your hand right in the middle of my presentation, feel free to do that too. We can adjust to your questions. I want this to be interactive to a good degree. How would you like to be able to see with X-ray vision? How would you like to have the ability to look at a sentence or a word and see words behind it, its history, and hear those words talking to one another? It's a pleasure, even if it doesn't have any economic value. It's a great pleasure to have X-ray vision. And I found that among the many blessings that Latin has brought to me, it's given me the kind of X-ray vision so that I don't just see one word anymore. I see families of words talking to one another. And W.H. Auden said that he likes the poet hanging around words and hearing them talk to one another. And a lot of great writers have praised Latin as giving them a greater abilities as wordsmiths to do things with words. How do we think, if not with words? How do we understand and communicate, if not with words? Language is what sets us apart from the animals and makes us an image bearer of God. We're the only creatures that study language and use language. So it's part of being an image bearer to use language. And in God's good providence in the history of the West, Latin is like the linguistic glue that holds all of the disciplines and professions and so many other institutions together. Even though we don't speak Latin as a common means of modern speech and communication, it still really is present. The Romans are still speaking through you. Did you know that? That 50%, every other word you speak is from the Romans. 50% of our English vocabulary is derived from Rome, from Latin. And did you know that 80 to 90% of the big words we use, the technical vocabularies, the polysyllabic words, are from Latin. So when you want to study something in depth and you have to acquire those big words, the Romans are still around. At our table at Classical Academic Press, we have some Roman coins, and I like to use those as object illustrations, and I like to hand them to kids and parents and say, why do you have one of those in your hands? And why does it only cost $10 that you can have this coin that might be 2,000 years old? And sometimes it takes some prompting, but eventually it comes to this. The Romans won. The Romans conquered all of Europe, all of Western Europe. They conquered this place called Hispania. And when they conquered Hispania, they made them speak Latin. And they conquered the Gauls. You've heard of Caesar's Gallic Wars? Gaul was France. And the Gauls were made to speak Latin. And as Latin began to merge with their native dialect over the centuries, that Latin evolved into what we now call French. And in Hispania, it merged and evolved until we call it now Spanish. So the Romans are still speaking in these Romance languages, of which there are at least five or six: Romanian, Romance, Italian, Portuguese, Spanish, and French. 90% of the vocabulary of these languages are derived from Latin. In fact, the word derivative is a derivative. It means down the river. De rivus. So these words come down the river to us and become our own. They reigned for 1,000 years, the Romans did, depending on when you start, you assign their start and finish. And even when Christ was born, he was born in the reign of Tiberius Caesar into the Roman Empire, wasn't he? In the fullness of time, Christ was born into the Greco-Roman Empire. And so the gospel writers wrote in Greek. Quickly, the Greek was translated into Latin. As the church began to grow, it moved into provinces using the same Roman structure created by the Roman Empire and used the Roman language. So the Latin Vulgate, translated by Jerome, just goes everywhere and becomes a part of making Europe literate, the Latin Vulgate, because the Christians wanted everybody to have access to the Scriptures, unlike the Romans, who are a little more elitist. So to study Latin is also to be not just acquire the X-ray vision that we're going to talk about, but it's also to enter into a story. Which is your story? It's a story of the West. That's why there's a narrative component to this, and when we teach students Latin, we don't want them to just see this as merely a utilitarian skill that will help them to get into med school and do well, although it can help. And there's nothing wrong with that. But it's also a part of your genealogy. It's a part of who you are. Don't you want to know more about who you are? Why you speak so many of these Roman Latin words? I like to say that I was talking to a young freshman girl at the booth named Rachel before I came here. She wants to be a scientist, but she's not sure she wants to study Latin. So you can imagine what I did in that conversation, and I'll be doing it here. But I said to her, you know, Latin, she did a little bit of Latin when she was younger, and she just didn't like it. And I said to her, that's not Latin's fault, okay? I didn't like history either when I was in high school, but I became a history major in college. Do you know why? What would your guess be? What's that? A teacher, a person who embodied it and was able to show me, not just tell me, but embody a love for history such that I began to love it because he loved it in front of me. So Latin is lovely, and if you don't see it as lovely, it's okay. I didn't think history was lovely for a while. It's okay to just be honest about who we are, right? We can't. Why lie about it? I don't get Shakespeare. That's not Shakespeare's fault. He is a master. He's universally acclaimed as being one of the greatest English writers of all time. So if you don't like Shakespeare, it's appropriate to say I don't like Shakespeare, but it's also appropriate to say, and I know the fault is mine. And the fault might be my teachers too. Maybe you didn't have maybe you had a junior high teacher who took you through 4 Shakespearean plays in 4 weeks, a teacher who herself or himself didn't really love Shakespeare or get Shakespeare or know Shakespeare, but had to teach it and moved you through the hoops when you weren't ready for it. And so you say, I don't get Shakespeare. So I hope that one thing that will happen as a result of the seminar is that you will walk away thinking, especially those of you who are contemplating Latin, thinking, well, Latin is supposed to be lovely. And I don't get it yet. That's okay. I'll still continue on the journey because I want to get it. So, getting the right teacher, having the right attitude. But love is important. Augustine said that all of education could be summed up as learning to love the things that are lovely. So, it took me a while to see Latin as lovely too. But it's been increasingly a blessing to me as I've grown with the language, because it's like getting to know my grandmother. Latin is your grandmother tongue. And if you get to know her, you're getting to know something about yourself, and she will be a blessing to you and travel with you. All right. How many of you have studied another foreign language? How many of you have studied a Romance language at one time or the other? Okay, great. Spanish or French or Italian. So I'll move through some any questions at this point before I start? I'm going to move through some slides, but okay, let's go to some of these slides. A couple of advertisements and helps for you as we begin. There's a great free article by Karen Moore called How to Teach Latin for those of you who are already doing it and might want to be better equipped at teaching Latin. So you can be like that enlightening history professor I had. You can download it at Classical Academic Press, and you can find it under free resources. If you want some online instruction, Scholae Academy is a place where you can have a live teacher who's really gifted, who hopefully will excite your students, if that would be a good fit for you. And there's a 10% discount for this group if you use this code SCHOLAE, H-E-A-V in capital letters. That'll give you an immediate discount on any course. And then if you want to have Karen Moore, who's a wonderful Latin teacher, actually teach you how to teach Latin, this course, if you use this particular code, Latin course HEAVE, you get $100 off of a $275 course. So for a few of you, that might be of interest. Is it revolutionary, Latin? I think Latin, if it's studied and loved, will do more than just help you with your SAT tests. Chesterton says that every revolution is a restoration, because the word revolve comes from the Latin word revolvere, which means to turn around again. So sometimes we're coming back to things and learning the value of things that for some reason we've cast off or forgotten, or nearly forgotten. Latin is experiencing a kind of renewal and resurgence. You probably heard the buzz, right? And some of you, like so many others, we think, well, what's it all about? I wasn't taught Latin in high school or college, so I don't understand this buzz. What is it all about? No doubt that's why some of you are here. But it is a kind of just restoration to something that's always been giving capacity to people for almost 1900 years. Well, if you go back farther, for almost two millennia, Latin was considered to be a necessary study if you were in the Christian West, and even before the coming of Christ, because it was the lingua franca. You know what that means? It means the language everybody speaks, because for a while in the 1800s it became French. Well, it's really the lingua latina, but at any rate. Capacity means room. It means breadth. It means a wide skill set. To have capacity is to be equipped for lots of different things. And this is why the study of grammar and Latin, of course, is the quintessence of studying grammar, is called an art, because it's not really a subject. Subject is a discrete thing you study for discrete, concrete tasks, skills necessary for them. But an art is a means of mastering other subjects. So without without the verbal arts of grammar, logic, and rhetoric, you're not really going to master the tongue and master language, but language is necessary for everything. So mastering grammar, mastering logic is helping you to master all of the other subjects, you see. So we're going to see how Latin, when you do study in Latin, you're really doing simultaneous study in lots of other subjects. You're already studying Spanish and Italian. So when kids come to me and say, oh, I really want to learn Spanish or French, I say, well, you should learn the grandmother of those tongues. Learn Latin, and you're learning those already. I'll give you a brief illustration of this. I don't know Italian, but do I? Okay, I know some Italian. I discovered this when I went to Italy last year. I did get a little book to practice the Italian pronunciation and learn some of the Italian endings, the O and the A and so forth. But the vocabulary was Latin. I recognized about 90% of the vocabulary. Now, I don't speak Italian very well, but I can read it. I could read all the signs. And then, of course, there were a few words I didn't know and so forth. I could take the newspaper and I could work my way through like 80%. I knew what was happening. It was a delight. I realized if I could just stay in Italy, wouldn't that be great? If I could have just stayed in Orvieto, why couldn't I stay in Orvieto? But alas, I had to come back after 12 days. I felt like I could learn the language quickly because I'd learned proto-Italian. So when kids come to me and say, well, I want to learn these languages, I say, why don't you learn them all? Because if you learn Latin, you're on your way to learning them all. And this is the way it used to be, men and women. People would know all these languages. They would, you know the joke about what do you call someone who can speak three languages? Trilingual. What do you call someone who can speak two languages? Bilingual. What do you call someone who speaks one language? An American. And it's because English is now the lingua franca. And everybody speaks English, so we are lazy. And we want to be multicultural. But the way to be multicultural is not to go to a Mexican restaurant. It's to learn Spanish. That's when you will be honored. I know a Caucasian who speaks fluent Japanese. When have you met a guy like that? He spent his first 17 years in Japan. He's from South Carolina. So he speaks South Carolina English, but then he also speaks fluent Japanese. When he goes into a Japanese restaurant, he gets free meals. I mean, because that is honor to learn Japanese. That's how you honor the Japanese. You learn Japanese, and they will honor you back when you go to a Japanese restaurant and in many other ways. So this is the way we honor. This is the way we build bridges. This is the way we create true multiculturalism. We actually learn and appreciate cultures by learning the language. So why be limited to just one? And of course, we learn Spanish in high school without learning Spanish grammar, right? So how many of you can say, oh, I took 3 or 4 years of Spanish in high school. Don't ask me to say anything. Because we weren't taught grammar. We were taught conversational skills that we haven't kept using, and we don't know how to actually construct sentences correctly. But the Latin grammar helps you to understand the structure of all language, not just Latin. You're studying, through Latin, you're studying the structure of all language. And Latin is a great language to study grammar with because it's so orderly and because the nouns are inflected. And I know for some of you that's just gobbledygook. You know how verbs have endings, right? Like walk is present tense. Add ed, I walked, and it's past tense. Well, in Latin, all the verbs have endings too to indicate their tenses and so forth, and even endings to indicate whether they're passive or active. Okay, but their nouns have endings. And we have a little bit of this in English. For example, if I say, I eat the taco, that's different from saying, me eat the taco. But I and me refer to the same person, myself, the first person singular pronoun, right? But if I say, me eat the taco, or he gave it to I, he gave the taco to I, we know that doesn't sound right. It's because we have different, we don't have endings in this case, we actually have different forms of the word to indicate how the noun functions in the sentence. I functions as a subject. It takes the action of the verb. I give, or I eat. Me is receptive, it's accusative, or it's objective, it's a direct object. You give the taco to me, or you see me. So we have that in English, right? But have you ever been taught that distinction? Some of us were never even taught that distinction. We know it to be true because of usage, but we don't know why it's true. Well, Latin shows you why all of that works. Because you can't crack the code and actually get the meaning from the sentence until you know these things. So the kids want to know the secret code to unlock the meaning of the sentence. And as they're unlocking the meaning of a Latin sentence, they're learning its grammar, its code. They're also, at the same time, without realizing it, learning the code that also works in their own language, English. So the best way to study your own grammar is to study the grammar of another language. Does that make sense? It's almost as if this. How many of you have traveled for, say, 2 weeks outside of this country? Didn't you realize when you were 2 weeks away that you were learning just as much about your own country when you left it? When you leave your country and experience another culture, your own culture and practices are shed in a bright new light. I discovered this when I was in Belize for 2 weeks. The Belizeans take their time getting places. 2 o'clock means roughly sometime in the afternoon. So, you know, we Americans are like, where is everybody? It's 2 o'clock. It's now 2:05. And you begin to realize we are kind of obsessive about time. But they have a different way of thinking about it. So I'm learning about myself by leaving my own country. I'm learning about my own country by leaving it. I didn't fully understand English grammar until I was studying Latin as a freshman at college. Because then I had to know what a predicate nominative was in order to decode the sentence and enjoy its meaning. See, only studying grammar in English is kind of tedious because we're immersed in it. We're speaking it all the time and we get along pretty well. We think we speak okay, especially if we have good speakers around us. So it's hard to get the point of it, right? It's almost like, let's study how to walk. Did you? And we're going to have several lessons on this, by the way. If you notice when you walk, your heel hits first. And then you transfer your weight from left to right. Let's all repeat that. Okay, I know how to walk. So this is the same kind of response that a fifth grader will have if you're just subjecting him only to English grammar. But if you can say, learn the secret code of Latin, and you can read Virgil or Seneca or the Bible in this strange tongue that dominated the world for 1,000 years and in which some of the greatest literature was ever written, and by the way, which still rolls around on your tongue half the time, now you've got a story. And you've got a code to crack. And they're going to learn English grammar at the same time. Now that's lovely to me. It's got a story element to it as well. Now I'm getting interested. It's not just some, you know, angry schoolmarm scowling at her kids with a ruler in her hand, rapping kids over the knuckles, saying, Amo, amas, amat, amamos, amatis, amat, again, amo, amas, amat. It's something greater and broader and deeper and imaginative. So I think it does create virtue, it brings pleasure, it imparts capacity, and it develops our own humanity. We begin to use our tongue in ways that delight us. That's where I want to be. Yes, okay. It's puzzle solving as well. There is a someone I know, my wife's grandfather, he died about 5 years ago, but he did cancer research, and he was one of four doctors who developed chemotherapy treatments. And he was a professor of medicine and so forth. He worked for NIH. And he was asked by a reporter once, his name was Charles Zubrod. He's actually featured in Malcolm Gladwell's book, David and Goliath. He did the clinical trials to develop chemotherapy treatment when it was considered to be a rather crazy thing to do. And so Gladwell cites him as being a leader and protecting his team so that they could do these clinical trials. He was asked by a reporter, what led you into a life of cancer research? And he said, and he told this to me when he was alive, he said his response was the study of Latin and Greek as a child. And the reporter apparently did a double take and said, well, I don't see the connection there. And he said, well, Greek and Latin to me was puzzle solving. And I enjoyed seeing how sentences were unlocked by solving the puzzle of how all of their endings work together. And that's what cancer is. It's a puzzle to be solved. That's how I view it. I'm trying to solve this puzzle. So it trains our thinking. It's a great training tool. And it's exceptionally good for gifted kids. So for those of you who have gifted kids, which are all of us, this will slow any kid down. You can get a fifth grader, a sixth grader, a seventh grader, a 12th grader to a level of Latin where they're humbled. And they have to slow down and take their time and attend rather than gallop along. And this is a very important skill. Constancy, attention, and perseverance and focus is really important in education. And Latin imparts that virtue naturally. It's an opportunity to teach courage, too, because you can always give a level of Latin that's more difficult, and you can give them the next level up that's going to take some courage to jump in. And that itself makes it a great training tool to impart these academic virtues. Well, here's a paper, and this is illustrate a little bit the X-ray vision. This is what happens to me and other people who study Latin for a while. They look at a paper like this, and we see the Wall Street Journal, the Senate slams the bank on whale, the word news, artillery, and these are all Latin words. Okay, journal comes from a word that involves the word dia, which means day. The acts of the day are in your journal. Going from the Latin to the French and then into our English. Look at the word Senate. Does that seem like a Latin word? The Roman Senate, senator. But I don't stop there. When I see Senate, I think of senator, which meant senator. But I also think of the word senex. Does anyone know that word in Latin? Senex means old man. We get the word, you know that word, don't you? Yeah, you recognize it. We get a fancy big word, speaking of a technical vocabulary. We get the word senectitude from senex, which means being of old age. So all these things start to ring. There's Latin cognates going on here. And I look at a word like, punctuate. Punctus means point, right? Punctus means point. Or I look at news, and I think of novum, which means new. And then I start thinking of other words like renovate and renewal all come from novum, right? I think of pope, and I think of papa, which means father. I think of, you look at any of these words, you know, March actually comes from the god Mars, named after him, right? And then you think of the word martial. Oh, yeah, martial law. It's when the military, all that martial stuff, it comes from Mars as well. And all of these things start to happen. We could go through word after word, and I'll just go through a couple more for you. Oh, dictator is somewhere on this page. You know, the Roman emperor was called a dictator, but dictator, from dicere, which means to speak. Because when the Roman emperor spoke, guess what? He got to dictate what you had to do. That's all related. Now I'm thinking of dictionary, where all of the words we speak are located. And diction, that's there too. All of these words coming from dicodicere, having to do with speaking. Can you think of any other words that come from dicodicere? Predict. Edict as well, the Roman edicts. Interdict. You see what starts to happen. These flood of words start coming in, and these words help me to think better, to understand and comprehend more. They start imparting a kind of capacity. Some other words on this page, solitary. Solitary cell. Solus, meaning being alone. Solitude. The word peace from pax. We get pacify, Pacific Ocean. A cell from kela, kelai, meant cell, hut, small room. Think of cellular, biological cells. You see the word add from adere, which means to add and to put to bring and increase. The word nation is up there somewhere. Natio means people, class, race. Vital signs is there somewhere. See it? I should have circled all of these. From vita or vita, which means life. And even the word apartment. Apartment means to divide, apartare, to divide things up into their parts. So apartments tend to be in buildings with lots of parts. My point made, this is what starts to happen, and that may be pleasurable, but it's also fun. And here they are. Here's some of them, just underlined for you. Some of the headlines. So we pretty much covered the why. There's maybe just a couple more that we haven't hit. English is the basis of 50 to 90% of our language. Studying Latin is to study all language through it because of its regular grammar. It's doing advanced training in multiple subjects. It's entering us into a great historical narrative that is partly our story. And it contains some of the best that's been thought and said, the best literature. It's great to read things in translation, but things are lost in translation. This is why we want our pastors to know the original languages, because you can't capture everything from one language to the next. It's just hard to do. Science is just rooted in Latin vocabulary. In fact, all of the professions, if you think about them, let's just recount them for a moment. And I know some of you know this really well because it's well documented, but it's still worth repeating for the few of you who might not understand this yet. Latin is the DNA of the West. You name an important profession, and you will find that it's steeped in Latin vocabulary. It could be architecture. It could be art. It could be art history. It could be music. It could be philosophy. It can be theology, all steeped in Latin vocabulary. You probably know that law, the legal profession, is steeped in Latin vocabulary. The medical profession, science comes from scientia, which means knowledge. All of the animals and plants have Latin names. Human anatomy is described in Latin words. I had a Latin student recently say to me, a former student of mine is doing his PhD in physical therapy, and he's doing his anatomy section. And he put a Facebook post up to all of his friends saying, "Thank you, Latin. I'm having such a better time than my friends are." Just to give you an illustration, you know what a patella is?
Yes.
Okay. Do you know what it is in Latin? It means small dish. So the Romans were having fun when they were naming the body. You take the kneecap bone, and it's a small little dish. It's a patella. All right. So the Latin words are not only interesting and helpful; they're sometimes fun. The Latin word dorsus means back. Now tell me what the name of a fin is that's on the top of a dolphin. Yeah. What about the muscles that extend off the side of your back? Lats, your lats. That comes from latus, which means side, like a lateral movement from side to side. Latus means side. But it's latus as a second word. Latimus, dorsi. The muscles on the side of your back. Commonly called your lats. But it all makes sense. And so it's much more pleasurable than memorizing gobbledygook words that mean nothing to you. Might as well call these the kichimacha. Because that's what it's like if you don't know the Latin, if you don't know this tongue. You start with that kind of strange challenge. So, science and even writing, the writers, you know, did you know what J.K. Rowling studied in college? She did. And that's why all the spells in her series, the Potter series, are all in Latin. There's even a Latin version of the first book, all in Latin. So, professions are there. So do you see here? So think of this analogy of a key. Someday your son or daughter will be standing in front of a door. In Latin, if they've studied it, will be like a silver key that will help open a door. And on that door it might be, you know, across that door might be written job in Italy. It might be medical school. It might be law school. It might be biological research. It might be poet. It might be pastor. It might be philosopher. It might be art historian. And do you see that Latin is going to be with you to help you open that door? Because it gives you the language of your desired profession. So it's doing many things at once. And it doesn't mean that you have to study Latin to be able to translate Virgil and the original to get these kinds of blessings. You don't have to become a college professor teaching Latin to experience this blessing. Most people throughout the, you know, the history of Western education didn't study Latin in order to become professors of it, but to acquire the capacity that comes from it. Let me stop there for a moment if they see if you have any questions. Yes. Nope, that wasn't a question. All right. But you remember we're going to have some time for questions in about 20 minutes, so go ahead and write them down. Think about them. I want to give you some testimonies from other people besides myself. I do want to give you this history first. That there was a time when everybody studied Latin, started to diminish around 1900. It was with the advent of progressive education, and we began to think that Latin really wasn't so necessary. A lot of other things were happening, which I don't have the time to describe all of that. I'm sure some of you are well familiar with the story of progressive education. But there's some recent renewal as people are beginning to take, and we can see that renewal and measure it in different ways. There are more people taking the National Latin Exam every year. That's one way we know. I know it just from being a publisher and seeing the rising interest in Latin as it's been growing over the last 10 or 15 years. Would you say you've noticed this too? Is it an increasing topic of discussion among educators, homeschool educators? Okay, many of you saying yes. I want to talk a little bit, too, for a moment, just about how to teach it. And I'm going to give you some practical advice that will be insufficient given the time we have, but might get you in a direction of thinking. I think that grammar and reading go together, and that you ought not to just study grammar, the rules of the language, the syntax of the language, or the, say, all of the verb and noun paradigms without doing some reading. I mean, you can do it. You can teach kids some endings before they do any Latin at all. But kids, I think, really enjoy studying Latin in context and seeing its point as soon as possible. So if you're teaching kids something like us, I, o, o, e, orum, isos, is, the Latin second declension noun endings in that case, you want them, as soon as possible, to see them in action because they're not designed just to be eeny, meeny, miny, mo. They're designed to be that's designed to be knowledge that's turned into skill. And that skill is only acquired in usage. So even with simple sentences, simple, even two-word sentences start to help kids understand that there's a point there. So I think we should only we should rarely teach kids to memorize stuff just without knowing its context. There's a place for that. I'm talking here about a proportion and a balance. There's a place for memorizing things and saying to kids, you'll understand this later and we'll get to that. But as soon as possible, show them its purpose and relevance. Show it in action, even if it's incipiently. That brings satisfaction and delight. But if you're going to chant and memorize, do it fun. Do it in an enjoyable way. Don't make it drudgery. Be creative. So instead of us, I, o, o, I, orum, is, os, is, again, us, I, turn it into a song. Turn it into a chant. Do it slow. Do it fast. Do it loud. Do it quietly. Do hand motions. Wiggy lo, wiggy lari, wiggy lawi, wiggy latim. I see to see, or I watch to watch. I watched watch. Throw in the hand motion there. Have the kids stand up. March around the room. Put vocabulary and paste it all around. So, you know, where there's a window, you've got a little tag that says fenestra. There's all kinds of ways to be creative using chants, songs, and jingles, right? Okay, and then blend memorization with immersion, which means as well as memorizing things, I think you should be getting them in the language, showing them the language in action. There's two main teaching approaches to language, parts to whole and whole to part. Parts to whole means you start with a grammatical rule, and then you can generalize it to the whole of the language. So you want to teach them a rule, and then they can see it generalized and working throughout the Latin language. The other way is sometimes called immersion, where you just say, we're not going to worry about grammatical rules so much. We're just going to start translating and reading Latin, and then I'll try to explain some of the grammatical concepts as they come up. I think a blended approach is best, not one dominating the other. If you just do grammatical rules but don't do enough actual reading in Latin, you're just memorizing rules. But the rules are always to be embodied in actual living language. So you need that balance, in my opinion. Get a good dictionary. I have the Collins dictionary on my iPad, my iPhone. It's just always there. The computer is great for dictionary. It's just that's one thing the computer does really well. If you want some additional evidence for the importance of Latin, because I'm leaving my argument for why Latin's cool, PromoteLatin.org is a great site where there's lots of statistical evidence and testimonies that will help you to see how Latin is great. Now, here's some real moms. Okay, when I did this seminar a couple years ago, I posted on Facebook and I said, okay, homeschooling moms, you tell the world about Latin's value. So here's just a few moms, and here's what they said in their own words. Deborah Brinkman, Latin is the first subject where he truly had to work to learn. I guess he's one of these gifted kids. He can't just float by on intuition. He needs to make a plan and actually study. And he can be very successful as long as he is consistent. So, the fact that Latin is learned by the accumulation of a fairly long period of consistent study has been tremendous for him. Latin has really helped my son understand English vocabulary and grammar. Plus, I tell people it's fun. It's my son's favorite subject. Paula says, the art of discipline. You can't rush through so many subjects that don't require you to stop and think through the process. Latin requires you to slow down and think. This has been one of the best benefits for my son. Based on personal experience, Catherine says, when you learn Latin, you realize that before you had been seeing language dimly as through a veil, but Latin makes everything clear. One woman writes, I'm sorry, but this question is like, what is the greatest benefit of being married for 20 years? I think she likes Latin. How would I answer that? The richness and deepness of understanding language and the beauty of thought expressed in words only increases as one reaches the next level, and like marriage, now, not without some hard work to get there. As I begin to teach my own children Latin, I was filled with a determination to learn it on my own, having survived my own non-Latin public school indoctrination. Studying this language has been such a huge eye-opener for me as well as for my children. Mental development, language, grammar, understanding and loving words and the word, providing connections between subjects that were unknown before, etc. She's talking about it being that glue. She goes on, but sometimes an anecdote is the best way to convey what happens when one studies Latin. Oh, this is a new, no, maybe it's the same person. Things like the following happen almost daily when your children study this wonderful language. My youngest 9-year-old was reading his science lesson in which he's studying birds. The lessons describe the birds flying in an undulating pattern. Hey, he exclaimed, like unda, which means wave, by the way. He knew exactly what it meant. This happened with my daughter and my kids and so many Latin students. I remember my daughter in sixth grade coming home from a classical school she was attending, and she said, we had a science lesson today about the environment, and I knew everything the teacher was going to teach before she even started to teach us. I said, well, how was that? Well, she put some things on the board. So what did she put on the board? Well, she put animal habitats, and then one said aquatic was on the board, and then there was terrestrial, and then there was arboreal. She said, I knew what she was going to say. I said, well, tell me about that. She said, well, habitat comes from habito, I dwell, I live. So I knew this is where the animals dwell and lived. And aquatic comes from aqua, aquae, which means water. So these are animals that live in the water. And territorial comes from terra, terrae, which means earth. So these are animals that live on the earth. And arboreal is from arbor, arboris, which means trees. So these are the animals that live in trees. And she was right. Do you see? That was an 11-year-old. Now interested in science before the science lesson had even begun because she has linguistic insight and capacity. So my daughter, when she was about 13, is going in Barnes & Noble, she sees a book on the shelf. It's Italian. And she says, huh, Italian. She opens it up. She starts reading the grammar. She knows the grammar already. She looks at a lot of the vocab, and she knows the vocab already. She bought the book. And then she started to do some tutoring in Italian. We found a student at Messiah College, where we live, who was a native Italian speaker. She started to meet with my daughter. Would Zoe have even gotten interested in Italian? But you see how way leads on to way. And she reached out for Italian. She got to go to Italy before I did. My wife is blessed with getting to teach there every 2 years. And all my kids got to go before I ever got to go. But do you see how Latin is opening up doors? And this will happen to your children as well. Your children will begin to acquire that X-ray vision. You see him come alive when he saw Senex, you know, things pop. It's internally pleasurable. You're becoming more human because you're using language well and understanding yourself. Even if that doesn't get him a great job, he's going to be a more interesting person. And he's going to have more fun. And he's going to be perhaps better equipped to do more than just one thing in his life. He could pursue multiple vocations if he's trained in the liberal arts. Not just Latin, by the way, but learning logic and rhetoric and the mathematical arts. That's what makes us the fullest version of ourselves. That gives us humanitas. That's why they're called the humanities. We become a more fully functioning, serving human being. Having been blessed by the study of these arts, we can bless others. That's joy. And under the lordship of Christ, the Logos, the Word, that is fulfilling our purpose and destiny. That's what education is to be. The unfolding and cultivation of a human soul that belongs to God, is returning to God, and wants to bring as many other people along with him or her. That's the Christian liberal arts tradition. We are being made by these arts so that we can make things, even arguments and poems, under the lordship of Jesus Christ, in order to bring him glory and to delight in being his creature who speaks and uses language. And the Roman language, Latin, is what he in his good providence gave to the church and to society to bring Christianity into the world and to send it forth. Now, there are arguments for studying all the other languages too. And you should know another modern language besides just the classical language, Latin. But you should know Latin because it's your heritage if you're an American, if you're a European, or if you're a human, if you're a Christian. It's going to bless you. All right. I think I probably should just stop there, but I think I have one more slide or two. Oh, yeah, I'm ready to just go to the practical stuff now. So some of you are going to say, well, what do I do? What do I study? Where do I go from here? I'm a publisher. I love Latin. We created the series called Latin for Children at Classical Academic Press. But let me just say this. while I love this curriculum, because I have to, I put so much into it, it's a labor of love, I'd be happy if you go get another Latin curriculum. Because I love Latin. Latin is what's going to bless you, not some published resource. A published resource is just designed to help you enter in to learning an art. But start with whatever curriculum you want to start with. I'd be happy to tell you about this one, but I'll mention some of the other ones. The Memoria Press curriculum is also a very good curriculum. There are others, and they're here, so take a look at them. Latin for Children is designed to be classical and creative. It's designed to be step-by-step and take students in a way that they can digest and appreciate through their upper elementary school years. We have a curriculum called Song School Latin that's designed for K through 2. That's just an exposure curriculum using song to teach and delight students in the language so they'll want to continue it into their upper elementary school years and through their junior and high school years as well. But embrace Latin. Whatever you use. And I have a couple of books up here that you can look at. We have an upper school curriculum called Latin Alive as well. 3-book series for designed for junior and high school kids. How to teach Latin? How to get ready? Some of you are here having to make this decision. Am I going to do it or not? Prepare your mind. Think about it. Do the comparison and contrast. Look at your curriculum pie. Look at your children and ask yourself, is this a wise decision to make at this point or not? But then prepare your heart as well. If you don't love Latin and you're thinking about it primarily as a pragmatic move, like this will be good for my kid, I know it will help in all these ways, so I guess we'll do it. That's good. But try to take the next step and love the language. Because if you can love the things that are beautiful and good and true, and in part, even if you're just beginning to understand why they're lovely, that is going to make a huge difference in the way your children receive it and the way you, as a family, enjoy the study of this art. The importance of heart is really important. It's also important to collaborate with others. When you're taking up a hard new subject that you weren't trained in, you need colleagues to collaborate with you. Another great derivative there from laboro labare, I work. And co means to work with, so you're working with people, collaboration, your colleagues. Make use of valuable resources like Latin for Children or Song School Latin or these other great curricula published by others. Headventureland.com is a free site for practicing Latin and Greek and some other languages. And it's free for anybody no matter what curriculum you're using. Some bilingual readers. There's some vocabulary review games, some animations. There's a number of things there that can supplement your studying using a book. I've mentioned this essay, but I want to mention it again. If you're going to be a co-teacher or the primary teacher, Karen Moore's essay will help you. Great. Oh, by the way, here's a shot. This is what Headventureland looks like. You go there, you can join, you can register. No one can talk to anyone, so it's very safe for your kids, but you can compete for scores in some vocabulary games and conjugation building games and such. This is what the Flash Dash vocabulary review game looks like. And they're for all different levels. You can find the level that's appropriate for your child. Plan, schedule ahead of time, but don't let a published curriculum become your master. It's your servant. Be willing, don't get into that trap of covering material at some artificial pace. That's one of the reasons you became homeschoolers, right? So you didn't have to do that. So that you could master each step. So that you could be adaptive. So if you need 2 weeks on a particular chapter, take those 2 weeks. If you only need 3 days instead of 5 days, move on. Pay attention. You want to learn and master Latin. You don't want to just follow a predetermined schedule. But you do need to do some scheduling and think through what you think you want to accomplish, but don't let it become your master. Your curriculum, by the way, is not what you buy, it's what you teach. The word curriculum means a course. In Latin, it's a course, like a race course. It's a cycle that you go through. It's your career. It's not what you buy. Those are published resources designed to help you teach your curriculum. Now, is it okay to use the word curriculum for published resources? Yes, it's okay. We use that word too. But its primary meaning is the course of studies you take your children through. So plan, schedule, but don't let it become your master, because otherwise you will diminish the delight and love. Learn ahead and along with your students. Studying Latin will bless you no matter who you are, what age you're is, what age you're, you, what, whatever your age. So even if you're sitting here and you're 40-something, you're thinking, my goodness, do I want... Well, you don't have to become a Latin scholar, but learn along with your kids, even if it's just to stay with them. And, of course, some of you realize, I have 6 children. I do think I could love Latin, but I have to be a realist here. I cannot be their Latin teacher, and I probably can't even learn along with my 14-year-old this year. That's okay to do, right? So don't beat yourself up. But if you can, with all your other responsibilities, join them in the study, that would be a blessing to you as well, because it's going to humanize you just as it does your children. The teaching and pedagogy, you know, teaching with the grain, we have 3 curricula with 3 different pedagogies. Our song school curricula is designed for young kids, so we use song as is half of the teaching in song in our song school line. Is the children's album in the back, complementing what's in the book. And it doesn't teach any grammar at this point, but we're teaching them 125 high-frequency words and teaching them to delight and enjoy the language. So that's an appropriate pedagogy for the younger children. Upper elementary school, they're ready to start doing grammar to see how language works. But they don't need a college text. They can only digest so much at a time when you're in, say, 4th grade. So we try to keep the chunks manageable and small and then take a break about every 4 weeks and then do a review and just lock in and enjoy what's come before. So regular review, manageable chunks is important for mastery. Master each step as you go. Don't cover material. Don't cover the chapters and check off the boxes. Don't fall into that method of teaching which we were exposed to and so influenced by, which is to cram, test, and then forget. Then your children will not enjoy it, and you've got to deconstruct that pedagogy and say, we're going to enjoy this, and we're going to take the time that's needed to go to master it and to know it so that Latin becomes our friend and serves us. Mastering vocabulary, especially with the younger kids at the elementary school level, is really important. I will often say to young students, but it's true of junior high and high school students as well, if you just master the vocabulary, you're going to pass. And I don't really grade traditionally, but what I'm saying is if you master the vocabulary, the other things are going to come along so much more easily, and anybody can master the vocabulary. So if you master the vocabulary, then when you're doing the translation that requires the application of the grammar, you're not distracted and irritated by the fact that you see words there that you're supposed to know but don't know and have to go look up again. When you know all of the words in a sentence, now you can do the puzzle solving and seeing how they all are supposed to fit together. So the grammar comes much more quickly when the vocabulary has been mastered cold. So take your time and master the vocabulary. Then the English words or the English derivatives are growing too, and that's its own great reward. But the grammar comes much more quickly. The biggest reason kids start to flail and stop loving Latin is because they haven't mastered their vocabulary. And grammar is a drudgery and an irritation when you don't know what all the pieces are before you can work on fitting them together. Does that make sense? I'll stop now. We'll just have some Q&A. So what do you think? What are your concerns? Yes, in the back. Sure, let me go back to that slide. There it is for you. Great. That helps. And, of course, it also helps to, when you memorize the words just by list and chanting them and so forth, and I encourage you to chant and sing words, especially at the elementary school level. Your 11th grader might have a little trouble with it, but your 11-year-old won't.
You would say the word in the definition?
Sure, I would do something like this. And our curriculum comes with an audio CD that has the chants and jingles. You can play them in the car and so on. But it goes something like this. Femina, feminai, woman, woman, porta, porta, gate, gate. Puella, puella, girl, girl. For nouns, for adjectives, we might do parvus, parva, parvum, small. Parvus, parva, parvum, small. Parvus, parva, parvum, small. And we'll go back and forth, sing-song way. With verbs, we do all four principal parts. Ambulo, ambulare, ambulavi, ambulatum. I walk, to walk, I walked, walked. Louder, faster, slower. Ambulo, ambulare, ambulavi, ambulatum. I walk, to walk, I walked, walked. The 11th grader might not enjoy doing that, but your 11-year-old will. And that's why you want to learn vocabulary when the children are younger. So if you have younger children, they are ready to acquire words, baby. That's what their brains are ready to do, is acquire words. So they'll do 10 words a week without much of a problem. I'm generalizing, but most kids, elementary age, they can acquire vocabulary quickly. Our curriculum will enable them to learn, master 240 words in a year, going at about 10 a week. Yeah, we're just about out of time, so some of you are going to have to go. We have 3 more minutes, so any more questions? Yes?
Pronunciation.
Yeah. Okay, good question.
And our, it's pronounced differently in different languages.
That's true. Now, Latin is not generally spoken, so how you pronounce it is not as critical, because no one's going to make fun of you because you did it wrong. There's 2 main pronunciation systems. One's called classical, one's called ecclesiastical. The dominant one is classical. You go to your typical college. If it's not a Catholic college, it's going to be classical. So I learned the classical pronunciation, but the two don't vary that much. There's just maybe 4 rules you have to learn. I teach my kids both, even though I teach generally in one. The ecclesiastical is the other one, and it's the pronunciation system that's evolved in the Roman Catholic Church. So if you're Catholic, you probably want to learn the ecclesiastical system. But if you like to sing sacred music, you should know the 4 rules that enable you to sing using the ecclesiastical pronunciation. It's not that big of a deal to me. I think it's fairly easy, even though there'll be some occasional confusion. Our curricula gives you both options. You just choose the track you want when it's audio or video. Yeah. Now, when it's me, because I was trained using the classical, you'll note a little bit of a bias. Occasionally, sometimes, I would say things like this. Wir means man, or vir, if you're using the ecclesiastical pronunciation. So I'll make those distinctions when I teach. That way, the students are getting both anyway, at least when I'm teaching. But for the audio, CDs, and all of that, you just choose the track. And the songs, you choose the track that you want.
There's a difference in pronunciation of the letter, just 4 different letters?
Yeah, let me give you an example. The pronunciation of the letter V.
Yeah.
In the ecclesiastical system, it's a hard V, like vitamin, V. And the classical system, it has a W sound, like we. So wir, V-I-R, means man. But it would be pronounced either wir or vir. And you have to get, you can go back and forth. You can turn that on or off. There's a couple others, too. But there's a few main ones like that. We have time for maybe one more question or a concern or a pushback, too. Tell me what you're thinking. Yeah, you asked a good one last time.
We're thinking about doing classical conversation.
Yes.
How do you feel that will work?
Oh, I'm a fan. I'm a fan of CC. CC is doing so much to invite people into the classical tradition of education. CC does they do Latin, so I love them. Anybody who's Latin has got my vote of support. CC does carry our song school curriculum, so we have a kind of partnership with CC. So I think it's great. Now, CC focuses on learning in the elementary years, doing learning some of the endings first. And that's okay. But if I had time in my pie, I would try to get them doing some more reading if possible. And one good thing about CC is that they support that. If you want to do more Latin, they say, have at it. Yes?
I'm a student in the challenge program.
Yeah.
They will push you to get a certain amount done in the curriculum. So to ask the tutor if you can slow down or something for challenge students, they have a certain amount you're supposed to cover before the next challenge. So or if you want to work over the summer as well to make sure you get that all.
That's great. So the tutors will adapt to the students that they have. That's excellent. Yes.
In the challenge, they will be doing the Henley program, I think. So my son is still in Foundations and starting Essentials. What book, because he's older than 8, would be a good supplement to help him so that when he gets to using the Henley in classical conversations.
Oh, yeah, there'd be a lot of good books that you could use as a bridge to going into that curriculum. You could use, how old is he?
He's 11.
11. Yeah, I like Latin for Children. It's designed for that age group. The Memoria Press publications are also good for that. I would take a look at those two and some of the others as well.
Does the Latin for Children come with only DVD or DVD and a CD?
Both, yeah, it comes with both of them. Well, I'll tell you what, just to honor your time, let's stop now, but if you want to hang around and talk with me, I'd be glad to talk to you further. Thank you for considering studying Latin and coming to the seminar. Appreciate it.